Hello, I'm Alice Arnold. Welcome to the Magic Musicals and Theatre Podcast. And in this episode, I'm talking to Hugh Maynard. And if you are a musical theatre fan, then why not listen to some of the other episodes in the series? Well, in the studio with me, I have got Hugh Maynard sitting opposite me. More exciting than anything, we're going to chat to Hugh about his musical theatre career in a minute, but he has bought cakes. He's bought candied orange cake. This is one I need to try and make. Mm-hmm. It says it's a moist orange zest sponge with ground almonds infused with a blood orange syrup topped with candy orange. It looks absolutely delicious. Meanwhile, I've been to the cupcake shop.
Wow.
As I always do when I interview somebody, and here we have actually a bit of a theme.
How
because
come?
Those are orange, you can choose, but you can't have all of them.
Okay.
That's orange, chocolate orange.
Love it.
And that's cookies and cream.
Wow.
So you can take your choice and either eat it during the interview or save it.
There are four fun-sized...
They're tiny.
Cupcakes.
They're a bite.
I'll leave you two.
It's one bite. All right. Will you take one of each
then? I'm
going to be
joking. I'll go for a little orange one. Lovely.
Okay.
Thank you.
Right.
Very nice.
Good. Well, that's got the cake bit out of the way. Well, I know I should introduce you, Hugh. Well, you're here because you're going to tell us about an amazing project that you've got coming up at the end of the year. But before we hear about that, we'll just say a bit about what you've done. So you trained at ALRA and at Arts
Ed. Yes.
Arts Educational, I should give it its full name. And then Andrew Lloyd Webber picked you out from there. Spotted you and said, come and join the cast of Jesus Christ Superstar. Well, that must have been an amazing moment, wasn't it?
Looking back, it was amazing. But at the time, I was very... I didn't know anything much at all, really. I'd moved to London from Devon. And it was just a roller coaster. I had a great time at ARA and an amazing time at Arts Educational Schools. Literally from tap, ballet, modern jazz, contemporary. I'd never worked so hard in my life. And to top it off, to have a... Mr. Webber himself come along and say he'd be great in this particular production was...
So what show did he come and see you in?
It was Fiddler on the Roof. And the story behind that, in brief, is that one of the third years had lost his voice. And so I was asked to play the constable. And I spoke to a friend of mine who had a Russian accent, had him read my lines that I was given. And I literally learnt my lines through listening to this other guy's voice. And it was a great way, kind of in a hurry, within 2 days, to kind of put some homework in and kind of give the director what they needed, for this particular piece.
So you weren't even meant to be doing it?
No.
Andrew Lloyd Webber comes along and sees it and says, I'll have a bit of that, gives you a job. That's like a fairy tale, isn't it, really? And since then, of course, you've done Sweeney Todd, Lion King, Follies, I'm reading my list here, We Will Rock You, Dancing in the Streets, Sister Act, and Miss Saigon. So out of all of those, what would you say was your favourite part you've played so far?
Gosh, I'm going to be biased. And this may annoy a few people, but it would have to be Clopin, the brother of Esmeralda in Notre Dame de Paris.
That's quite off the wall there.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. where was that? When was that?
That was at the Dominion Theatre many, many moons ago. 2002, 2003.
Right.
Don't quote me.
Picked an obscure one.
I'm really bad
one.
With the years.
Mm-hmm.
And but Tina Arena was in it. And so I was her half-brother. And it was fantastic. Literally, I just stood there and sang my heart out. Meanwhile, there were dancers behind depicting the story, and just so animated, tumblers, acrobats running up and down walls. It really was that kind of French art theatre piece.
Mm-hmm.
And my second best would have to be Miss Saigon playing John.
Yeah.
Because for me, I just love to sing Bui Doi.
Yeah, yes. Wonderful music from that. And you were the first black actor to play Sweeney Todd.
I am, yes. Yeah. Well, in the UK, I must add.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't want to not be correct, but yeah, certainly UK-based. So yeah, very, very lucky.
See, I was talking to Matt Henry recently. From
Good friend of mine.
Is he?
Yes, yes.
And we were talking about work for black actors, and he was just saying how much the situation had improved recently. Yes. That have you found that there are more parts, or people are seeing more parts for black actors? Not necessarily have to be more parts. They just have to open their eyes a bit and say, yes, a black actor could play that part. Do you think the situation's got better?
I feel that the situation is improving, and I hear, you know, the words of Idris Elba and, you know, just making sure there are platforms for all arts, you know, all artists, you know, not just, how do I say this, you know, ethnic minorities. For example, I wouldn't want to see a piece played by a black artist just for the sake of putting a black artist in that role. They have to be right for the piece. Mm. With Sweeney Todd, honestly, I was so, so fortunate. I really went to the audition thinking that I'm there to for the producer to tick off the box. That often happens. Mm-hmm. You know, School of Rock was the one preceding that. And it said in the brief, Nicholas Lyndhurst type character. I even brought it up in the audition, and I just got smiles back, like uncomfortable smiles. But it happens, unfortunately. But now that people are aware, I'm sure it will improve.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you also were a member of the group's Tenors of Rock, and you performed at the 2012 Olympics concert.
That's right.
Tell us about that, 2012. We all love talking about 2012, so let's talk about 2012, because it was a brilliant time for everybody.
London was beautiful, so welcoming.
It was, you know, loved it.
The underground was manageable, you know, the air was cleaner. No, really, it was fantastic, and it was great to be part of the 2012 Olympic Games. Performance-wise, as an artist, and to sing in front of over 70,000 people in Hyde Park, it's not even a dream come true. It's fantasy. You possibly can only see about 30,000, and the rest are just kind of like cartoon heads, you know. But to hear people singing along, we were actually
what
supporting.
Did you sing?
Oh gosh, we were singing rock anthems. You know, God Gave Rock and Roll to You, Living on a Prayer, Desperado, you know, the Eagles. But we were supporting McFly. So as you can imagine, the crowd was loud. But every time you mentioned McFly, they went crazier, you know. But yeah, it's fantastic, fantastic.
Oh, amazing. And then you released your first solo album a couple of years ago.
That's right.
And how do you feel about the recording process as opposed to singing live? It sounds like you love singing live.
For me, it was difficult because I planned to get the album out before Miss Saigon. In fact, I didn't know I was doing Miss Saigon when I started the album. And the album came about by family and friends saying, you know, you should have something out there, you know, something tangible so people can kind of put it in their cars or, you know, on their stereos, you know, download from the internet. And so 10 years later, you know, after a bit of badgering, I finally did it. But unfortunately for me, it was at the same time as Miss Saigon. So literally, I get off stage. I go to a studio on Dean Street I finish work at about 10:30. By 10 to 11, I was singing tracks on the album.
At night?
At night. And that would be the same on a Thursday and a Saturday, you know, on a two-day show as well. In fact, the album launch was on a Thursday after two shows. So before going to work, I went to a venue in Leicester Square, and they gave me the space for free, which is fantastic, and it's really kind of bijou, really, really intimate. In between shows, sound check, after the show, lift off. So looking back, it was hard work, something I wouldn't want to do again.
Well, maybe not like that. Maybe do it when you're not in the show.
But definitely. But I did enjoy the creative process and being in the studio, but for me, the timing was just not the best, but I loved it, you know. And it's weird now listening back, because I'm the kind of person that finds it difficult to hear myself, even if I have a like voicemail. Like, do I sound like that? So having a whole album of me was a bit difficult, but I've slowly gotten used to myself.
Right. Well, it's about time you did, I think. I want to go back to your childhood, because you had a pretty interesting background. I'd say interesting, tough, but so you were brought up in foster care.
Yes.
And that means quite a lot to you, because you talk about those experiences, don't you, to sort of help other people who have been in similar situations?
I do. I feel it's important, not just because it's my background, but because there are so many people that are going through similar situations that are in the care system. And it's about letting them know that if you work hard enough, if you're dedicated, that you can succeed. There's a mentality almost that if you've had a rough or a bad upbringing, you can that other people tolerate bad or rough behaviours, you know, or inappropriate behaviours. Maybe not inappropriate, but certainly certainly antisocial behaviours. And they say, oh, you know, well, so-and-so was this happened when they were growing up. And people go, oh, that's okay then. Actually, it's not okay. I decided at a young age that if I ever met my birth mom, I wanted to make her proud. And so that instilled in me a sense of working hard, being diligent, being committed to whatever it was that I put myself to. But that also led to problems because then I was a good runner, I was a good swimmer.
All right. Could have been in the Olympics, see? Could have been competing.
Firing the starter pistol, perhaps, you know. But it led to me being rather better than average at most things. You know, I'm not bragging, but, you know, I was very much dedicated. And I didn't start singing until pretty much 18 or 19 years old. I sang at school on the last day of assembly. But up until then, I played, a trumpet. I had a trumpet in my mouth, so therefore I couldn't sing unless I was, you know, Louis Armstrong. But it's about letting the children and young adults know that, well, you know, that you are normal, that you do fit in, that we are the same. And without having, I guess, a figurehead or for someone for them to look up to or someone that they can relate to, I feel it's easier to get lost if you had such a troubled background.
Yeah.
So
well,
really
you're providing
a
role model for them to look at and
definitely,
go, yeah, actually, it's okay, I can do. Have you ever met your birth parents?
I have. Didn't go down too well, but okay. I have, yes. Yeah.
Right.
But I'm still driven, still
right.
focused.
Yeah. And, yeah. And are you still in touch with your foster parents?
I am, but not the people that fostered me when I moved to Devon. I'm with another family now. I've been fostered many, many times,
okay.
More than six times, actually, before I was 8 years old, and that didn't stop. So it's been quite a roller coaster.
But do you feel a bit rootless or... Well, actually, Little Bird told me you are going to be forming some very strong roots shortly.
I have felt unrooted for a long time. The word I use is a late developer.
Right.
But I'm getting married in July to a lovely lady called Maria Laura Filippetti, who's a doctor, a neuroscientist.
Oh, you've got someone to keep you
well
grounded. That you're marrying somebody sensible.
I think I'm
well
a test
done.
Subject, honestly. But yes, that lovely Italian lady. And so I'm off to Italy in July to get married.
Lots of luck with that. All right, let's get on to what you're doing this winter, which is you're going to go on a massive UK stadium tour in a brand new musical called Heaven on Earth. And you're playing a fairly crucial character, shall we say. You're playing Adam.
Playing
as
Adam.
As in Adam and Eve.
That's right,
yeah.
Yes.
This is a brand new show. What do you know about it so far?
Not a lot. I don't even know what I'm wearing. I would be wearing something, you know.
Well, I hope so. A fig leaf, at least a fig leaf.
I was thinking a bonsai tree, actually. But my co-star, Kerry Ellis, will also be wearing something as well. But we don't know as yet. There's going to be so much technology involved. In fact, new technologies that have not yet been used on stage. I'm meeting up with the director, Racky Plews, in 2 weeks' time, and we're going to talk further about the character, about the piece, the staging.
How do you play Adam? Who is Adam?
Who is Adam? It's such a great question, and it's a question I'm getting a lot recently, you know. What made you want to play the part of Adam, you know? But who doesn't want to be the first man on the planet, you know, or woman on the planet, you know, person? It's the unknown. And if you're an actor, that is what you enjoy about what we do, or certainly myself, I enjoy the discovery of character, and so will Adam.
Well, you can create...
It's limitless.
It is. I was going to say, you can absolutely create this one, because no one's going to say, Adam
that
shouldn't
wasn't
be
right.
like that.
That wasn't Kirk Douglas, you know? Yeah.
And have you heard any of the music yet, or...
Well, snippets? Russell Watson and I sang a song at the media launch, which we'd learnt about 2 days earlier. Mm. So they're keeping everything tight-lipped at the moment. So it's a well. I know that you know the orchestrations are going to be amazing. I think I can tell you that during the piece, there will be the plants, for example, the flowers will be blooming and growing on stage.
Is this part of the technology?
Of the technology, yes. Yeah.
And Kerry Ellis is your co-star.
That's right.
Have you worked with Kerry Ellis?
I have, yes, a couple of times. We did okay. Miss Saigon many moons ago, and we were Rock You at the Dominion Theatre.
Okay, so you're good chums.
We certainly are.
And then
are,
Russell Watson appears as a hologram or something? Or what's that bit about?
Maybe a hologram through the waterfall, but it will be the voice of Russell Watson, so he'll be the voice of God, a big boomy voice.
Okay, so he's got to work on that character,
definitely,
obviously.
Definitely.
And is there a big chorus and lots of other people?
I think it's going to be pretty huge. Again, I don't know numbers, but it's over 30 people with an orchestra as well. So, yeah, all I can say is it's going to be extravagant,
huge.
You know,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, and when it starts. It starts in December or something.
Well, like I say, I'm meeting up with the director in 2 weeks' time. I think company-wise, we'll all meet up in September. And the public will get to see our first show in Birmingham in December. So we have 3 months, well, just over 3 months of rehearsals.
Oh, that's quite a long time.
It is a long time. Yeah. But again, because it's a new piece, it's going to be very much an organic process. And there'll be lots of things, for example... When you create a piece, it wouldn't surprise me if scenes get cut, songs get cut.
Yeah, there'll be changes along the
way. Yeah, so that's up to our kind of director and choreographer, Raki Plews. I'm going to leave that aside to her and just give her everything I've got, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And accept the changes.
Yes.
Accept the change. That's fine. I just learnt all that and now you want to cut it.
Arr.
That's absolutely fine. Do you have a favourite song from a show that you would like to sing that you haven't done yet?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I have been spoiled as of late because 2 weeks ago I was in St. Albans and I sang Gethsemane from Jesus Christ Superstar. So having played Judas, I was not yet able to play Jesus, but being able to sing that one song, which goes on for about 7 minutes.
Yes.
I don't think I could play Jesus.
We had it at Magic of the Musicals. It is a long night. It is a long night.
It really is. It really is.
What else? Oh, I know. Yes, talking about all these effects, you talked about a waterfall in the show, and then animatronics, it says, and fire. I just wanted to know, do you think you're going to be safe?
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I didn't know what I could and couldn't say.
Right, well, it does say, they have revealed that there is fire, water, and animatronics.
There'll be fire, water, animatronics, and flying.
That clearly wasn't.
I wasn't allowed to say that, was I?
No.
Oh, no.
No. Are you flying?
I'm not flying.
Who's flying? God. God flying?
Maybe Russell.
Animals flying.
Yeah, maybe Russell will fly in and fly out, and the serpent, perhaps.
But it's big stadium. Are they flying on ropes or flying?
Oh, yeah, flying on ropes, yeah. Not literally.
Not the jet things.
No. Not that kind of technology.
Stuff.
I don't think it would be fair on the audience.
It sounds like it's going to be amazing. And how long are you doing it for? The tour of...
It's
stadiums.
Up until May 2018.
Oh, okay.
Yes. It may extend, it may not, but we'll see how it's received.
Well, of course, if you have an accident, you're marrying a doctor, so it'll be fine.
I'll be fine.
You'll be fine. You just
if it's a head injury, that is, yes.
Yeah. Oh, is that her speciality, is
yeah,
head
if I get hit in the head by an apple,
oh, well,
then
that's probably the most likely thing to happen. Or you get dropped on your head
definitely.
While you're flying, and you just go, look, don't worry, just call my wife. She'll sort it out. Now, for more details on this extravaganza, which is called Heaven on Earth, you can go to heavenonearththemusical.co.uk. And lots of luck with flying fire, water and animatronics when you star in Heaven on Earth beginning in December.
Bless you. Thank you very much.
That was the Musicals and Theatre podcast. And if you enjoyed that, then why not subscribe? It's absolutely free to our channel on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also hear me every weekend morning from 6 till 10 on Mellow Magic.